Welcome to Ship to Shore with Silverman. I'm your host, talk radio advocate, Fran Silverman, and this show is about cruises. Today, I am welcoming back Mike Thiel, president of Hideaways International, a membership-based boutique travel agency founded in 1979. As such, Mike gets to travel on luxury liners, and he has just returned from a one-week cruise aboard the Sea Cloud II, a five-star sailing vessel, which Berlitz describes as one of the most luxurious true sailing ships in the world. If you'd like more information, slides, and videos, go to hideaways.com/travelseacloud. Michael, welcome back.
Well, it's sort of good to be back.
I'm so glad to be back.
Although it was one heck of a lot of fun being on Sea Cloud.
I can imagine. Now, your cruise started in Naples, and you around Naples, and you sailed around Sicily, and you ended in Malta.
Right.
Now, when we were on the Amalfi Coast, we were told to avoid Naples, that it was too dangerous. So what I want to know is, how much time did you spend in Naples, and was it dangerous?
We spent a couple of days in Naples prior to the cruise and went over to the island of Capri, as they pronounce it, not Capri, for another day. And then from there over to the island of Ischia for another 2 days and back to Naples to catch our ship. And no, I was very pleasantly impressed with Naples. In fact, it's a big cruise base. A lot of the Italian flagged liners go out of there. You know, I think it's the home base for Costa, which, of course, became famous this year because of the upending of its mega ship there up off the Tuscan coast. But no, Naples, the old town is absolutely gorgeous. It's fantastic. I would recommend spending, if you're taking off from on a cruise from Naples, I'd certainly recommend doing either a pre or post if you're beginning or ending there, and spending probably 3 nights at a minimum.
Really? Did you get away from the port at all, or were you just at the port at Naples?
We were right on the Bay of Naples at a hotel called the Vesuvio, which is a five-star classic sort of hotel right on the promenade, facing the what's called the Castel d'Ovo, or the Castle of the Egg. Which is a beautiful little peninsula with a big castle on it that dates back to the 1400s, 1500s. It's now a buzzing place for nightlife, restaurants, and so forth. But we were within walking distance of the old town, although a cab is a little easier, and of the San Carlo Theater, which is the oldest opera in the world. No, Naples is great. I loved it.
Why did you stay in a hotel? I thought you were on a ship, on a sailing ship. Don't you sleep on the ship?
Well, no. This was prior to meeting the ship.
Oh. Okay. Well, do you think if you went into the inner city, it would be dangerous? Or is it like New York has a reputation as being dangerous? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's just, you know.
We saw nothing dangerous about any of the parts that we were in. We were in the older part of the city, the historic part of the city. We didn't go into the more industrial or other parts of the city, but the main part of the city is enough to keep you pretty busy.
Uh-huh.
Lots of museums, lots of beautiful old churches.
You know, if you're lucky and you know, people don't target you as tourists and stuff like that. So you spent a few days in Naples, and then you boarded the ship.
Right, and then our first stop was Sorrento.
Oh, we were there.
Frankly, I was a little disappointed in Sorrento.
Yeah.
I thought it would be more interesting than it was. I mean, its setting up on the cliffs is quite nice. There's a couple of nice hotels there. One of which we checked out. Sorrento was fine, but I think you need to get over to Positano on the Amalfi Coast before you get the more truly interesting.
Yeah, that's where we started, from Positano, and then we went to Vesuvius
What we did do, which was interesting, and this is again We wanted to talk about the Sea Cloud and about small cruise lines, small ships. This is something that you could only really do on a small ship because I don't think the bigger ones would go there because of port sizes and limitations of the destination. But we stopped by the Aeolian Islands, which lie just between the southeastern tip of Sicily and the mainland. And they're a gorgeous, gorgeous destination. There's, I think, about four inhabited islands, the largest one being Lipari, which is where we stopped. And in that particular case, we anchored out, tendered in, spent most of a day there, which was sort of enough to see it, but I wouldn't have minded spending more time on Lipari. Gorgeous museum, and just a very scenic island. The whole island group is scenic. We sailed by.
So there were four islands that are inhabited?
I think that there's a four of multiple islands that are inhabited. We sailed by the island of Stromboli, which still has a very active volcano on it. That was at like 5 in the morning. We were hoping to see lava and flames and all spewing from it, but unfortunately it was in clouds. However,
wow,
we did hear it rumbling off in the distance, which was very impressive.
Fortunately or unfortunately.
What's that?
You know, you don't want any volcanoes going off.
Well, this area is very active. When we left Lipari, we sailed by the island of Vulcano, and you could see it steaming and hissing and a sort of a flat top where its caldera is. It was pretty impressive. And again, we sailed right close into it because we were on a small ship that can do that.
All right. So then you went to Malta. Now, I was reading about Malta. It seems to me that it's a place of fame are the archaeology sites. I mean, is there anything there?
Malta is gorgeous. Malta is one of my favorite island destinations.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's three inhabited islands, really only two, Gozo and the island of Malta itself. And then there's the island of Comino, which I think has all of about 30 people on it. But they're very Mediterranean. They're very strategic. They've changed hands among different countries and peoples over their lifetime or their discovered lifetime of some 5,000 years. They've been the Greeks, the Romans, the Crusaders. The Crusaders probably had the most impact on it, the Knights of St. John and the Knights Hospitalier. And it's a fortified destination. The city of Valletta is totally encircled with ancient fortifications and walls. It's very dramatic, especially coming in from the sea. It's a place. Oh, I like Malta. I like the it's English-speaking for the most part, although they have their own native language of Maltese that is sort of a combination of Italian and Arabic. But yeah, everybody speaks English, so it's easy to get along. Some parts of it are very heavily touristed and with group tourism, so I avoid those areas. But the island of Gozo is, I would say it would compare favorably visiting and staying in the island of Gozo to having a vacation in the Tuscan countryside. It's
what's the name of the island?
Gozo, G-O-Z-O.
Gozo?
Yep. It's very lush. It's sort of the breadbasket of the island group. A lot of agriculture. You can rent a farmhouse there. There's several nice hotels. The beaches on Malta are not great, but then most Mediterranean beaches, frankly, aren't very good. They're usually pebbly and or dark sand.
Even at Capri, or how do you pronounce it?
Capri.
Even at Capri, the water was very pebbly.
Yeah, that's typical Mediterranean. But the water is very clear and nice. A little chilly in May when we were there, although we did stop once off the city of Siracusa before sailing on to Malta. And the captain anchored the ship about 2 miles offshore and set out a bunch of foam rafts for people to lounge around on and said, anybody who wants to go for a swim. So we all dove in. It was refreshing. It was a little bit like New England in the summertime.
Sounds heavenly. Now, it has less than 100 passengers, right?
The Sea Cloud 2, let's talk about the Sea Cloud. Sea Cloud is a small line that is based out of Hamburg, Germany. It's German-owned. A number of German investors all went together to rescue the original Sea Cloud, which was the yacht constructed by Marjorie Merriweather Post of Post Cereals fame, uh-huh. General Mills, who happened at that time to be married to E.F. Hutton, the financier, and they were very fond of spending their time sailing around the world. He built a yacht by all their specifications. It was called the Hussar originally, because he had a long string of yachts named Hussar. I think it was the Hussar 5. They got divorced. She got the yacht. She renamed it Sea Cloud, and she proceeded to sail pretty much all around the world. They had sailed together around the world with it, and she continued that. Then it went into disrepair, and it's a long story. I mean, Trujillo owned it at one time, the dictator of the Dominican Republic, and it ended up in Central America and whatever. And finally it was rescued and restored to its original glory, and we're talking about quite a glorious yacht. At the time, it was the largest sailing yacht ever built, something like 350 feet long, four masts. It's a barkentine, which means that part of it's square rigged and part of it in the back is regular front and aft rigged for the sails. The original one sails with a total passenger list of about 64. The one we were on was a reproduction built in 2001 that sort of expanded on it. Same lines, similar ship. A little bit wider, a little bit longer, a few more modern comforts were able to be built into it and so forth, but it keeps much of the same style, and the style is very high-end. In the original yacht, they had working fireplaces in the suites, gold-plated faucets and spigots for their tubs, the deep-sink tubs for the suites, etc. This yacht maintains a lot of that style, lots of marble, really elegant classic style to it, very nautical style. So it's quite a ship to sail, and it sails with a crew of about 65 against the 90 passengers, and about 20 or 30 of those 65 are real sailors who are climbing up the rigging and dropping sails and trimming them to the wind and so forth. The whole rigging of the ship is very authentic. The only thing that is not authentic is perhaps the big winches to control the sails, and they're hauling up and down and so forth, are electric driven these days, as opposed to in days of yore, there'd be a lot of muscle and manpower.
Where were most of the passengers from?
In this particular cruise, the great majority of the passengers were from Germany. There were a bunch of Australians, and we were the only Americans. There were some Austrian, as well as Swiss, and I think some Dutch. So a fairly international crew, but the great majority of them were German-speaking. And I will have to say that particular line seems to sort of lean towards the German-speaking audience and is marketed, I think, primarily in the German-speaking countries. So is that an issue? A little bit of one, to be quite candid.
Why is that?
Well, we felt there was a little bit of a polarization of the passengers. The two Americans, myself and Gail, mixed with the Australians, and there were a few of the German speakers who felt comfortable enough speaking in English that we had a very good time speaking with them, but not the majority of them.
Really? I thought Germans spoke English.
Well, they may, but when they're among their own, they feel more comfortable speaking German, just as we feel more comfortable speaking English. Uh-huh. It's always an effort to speak another language that's not your first language. So the passengers on this particular cruise, and I can't say that it's true of their other cruises, because, as for instance, they spend a lot of time in the wintertime in the Caribbean. And in the Caribbean, I'm sure that they have a broader passenger base than we experience.
All right, we're going to take a short break, Mike, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the ship itself and
sure.
people that you met. So forth. So
okay.
We're back. Okay, we're back with Mike Thiel, and we're talking about his trip aboard the Sea Cloud II along the, I guess it's the Amalfi Coast and the Aegean. Is that where we say?
Not the Aegean, but the Amalfi Coast and the Tyrrhenian Sea around Sicily and on to Malta.
Okay, so let me ask you this. With less than 100 passengers and virtually no nightly entertainment and an open seating at meals and Germans who didn't speak English, did you meet enough different fascinating people that could replace shipboard entertainment?
Yes. And I say that slightly hesitatingly. It would have been nice if the ship had done a couple of things differently. As for instance, apparently the person who normally would serve as the maitre d' was under the weather, and they really didn't have a maitre d' to ask you the typical things that you would be asked when reporting for dinner, which is, you know, would you like to share dinner and sit with somebody else? In which case, that maitre d's job is to provide the introductions. That would have facilitated mixing a lot better. If they'd held a few of the tutorial things that they did earlier in the cruise, like they did a rope tying session of learning how to do knots and so forth. That sort of brought people together and got them talking to one another and introduced to one another. So I think that and we provided this feedback to the management of the company, that there's a few things that they need to do to sort of get people to mix better. But in general, Francine, these small ship cruises are not really for the person who wants a high level of external entertainment, you know, floor shows, casinos, any of that kind of thing. They're people who feel comfortable sort of providing their own entertainment, enjoying their own company, reading a good book, possibly watching a video in your movie in your cabin, although we sure don't do that, spending the night up on the deck under the stars, enjoying the evening. They're really not for people who need to be spoon-fed a lot of entertainment.
I just was wondering, for somebody like you, who is you're doing this for your business? You you want to decide whether you want to add Sea Cloud to your roster of clients, I assume, right?
Correct.
So you look for things like what's the makeup of the passengers, and and is there enough interesting people that could replace the typical entertainment?
The folks that we met were indeed very interesting. Oh, there was one German gal who was traveling all by herself. She must have been in her late 70s. And Helga was just amazing. She had a severe case of hunchback. But she somehow got around that ship all by herself. She cruises 6 times a year or more.
For her.
She lives in a retirement home, but she just takes off from the retirement home and spends the great majority of her time cruising. 2 weeks after she stepped out in Malta, she was going to be headed for Greenland, the nice one, on another cruise ship. This gal was amazing, and she spoke very good English. She was from Berlin. We had a really nice time, both having dinner with her sometimes and cocktails and just sort of chatting her up. The ship's doctor was a German, also from Berlin. Her husband was an academic. He actually was Swiss, I believe. But they spoke English quite well, and they mixed very much with both ourselves, the Australian folks. And then one or two other couples who seemed to feel comfortable speaking uh-huh. English. So,
what do you actually look for? I mean, when you're looking on a luxury ship, what kinds of things are you looking for?
Well, certainly we're looking for good service, and we could not fault the Sea Cloud at all on that. The service was excellent, very, very good all the way around. The dinner service was one very small step short of Michelin one star in terms of both the cuisine and the presentation and the service. Excellent. We look for the cuisine, obviously. We want to make sure that cruises are supposed to feed you well. And in most cruises, I think they, or many cruises, especially at the lower end, try to get away with feeding you a lot. Well, a lot is not necessarily the same as feeding you well. As I said, the Sea Cloud portions were actually not so much that you worried about putting on too much weight. They were more gourmet restaurant portions, not so slim that you said, wow, is that all there is? But certainly on the light side. Lunch, on the other hand, was a huge spread out on the Lido deck, the rear deck, which is a beautiful open-air venue for lunch, with a huge buffet selection of really gorgeous, high-quality fish.
Well, if you eat a big lunch, you don't need a big dinner.
Exactly. Exactly. And wines are served with all meals, wines and beer. Those are included in your rate. But we like to see that on a cruise ship. And the reason we like to see that is because it eliminates a point of embarrassment. If you're sitting with other people and you've just been introduced to them and you want to have wine and maybe they're on the fence about it or whatever, it's like, well, do you share the wine that you just ordered at $50 a bottle or whatever you pay for it, or do you hoard it to yourself, or how do you deal with that? When they serve free wine on the ships, that takes away that issue, unless you want to go for
free. Oh, so it's
time.
Free.
I beg your pardon?
It's free. It's part of the package.
Exactly.
Aha. Uh-huh. So the service is excellent, the food is excellent. What else do you look for?
We look for good, interesting itineraries, obviously, and that's one of the advantages of cruising a line like Sea Cloud and the other small ship cruise lines that we've had experience with, which is quite a few of them. Most of them tend to focus on destinations that are a little away from the tourist trail.
Mm-hmm.
And not competing with some of the larger ships. The worst thing in the world is to land in some destination that's hugely popular and have it overrun with all of the passengers streaming off of a Carnival or an NCL cruise or one of these cruise lines that has 4,000 and 5,000 passengers.
That's a very good point.
You're overwhelmed. The only place where that happened to us, and it was quite telling in the experience, was coming into Malta. There was a procession of ships coming into Malta because it's a popular destination for either starting a cruise. And right in front of us was a big, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 passenger ship. And right coming in behind us was a 5,000 or 6,000 passenger ship. And the town of Valletta, I think its normal population is only 20,000, 30,000 people. So you dump, 15,000 people there, that was 11,000 people for argument's sake there. You've increased the population by 50%.
Yeah.
When we were touring around Valletta, we had our own private guide, but we were bumping into, groups of 15 and 20 people all off these ships with their badge numbers because there were that many groups. I mean, we saw badge number 62. That means they must have had 62 groups of people running around there, all trying to see the same sights in this beautiful destination. Most of the other places we stopped, we had nobody. We stopped in Palermo, which was a surprise to me, a beautiful destination. We stopped in Siracusa. There we pushed right up into a marina that normally only yachts would be at.
Do you think that's because cruise ships can get to Malta, whereas they can't get to the Amalfi Coast?
Exactly. There's certain destinations where they're set up to take the bigger ships, and they seem to welcome them. But there's others like the Aeolian Islands that you have can have all to yourself. Capri usually doesn't see very big ships. It sees some ships that carry a few hundred people. I don't think they get the mega ships, though, it's Capri.
Well, it usually comes from Italy, doesn't it?
Well, not necessarily. There was a Hapag-Lloyd German ship in Capri when we were there. We saw it down in the harbor. That looked like it probably held 200-300 people, maybe a few more.
And what about seasickness? I mean, I know that with cruises, you generally don't get seasick because they're such big ships. But in a sailboat, what is it like?
Well, we happened to have particularly calm seas when we were there. You could have some motion. Gail gets seasick at the drop of a hat. In spite of that, she likes cruising. Two of her solutions to that problem, one is that there's I think everybody's aware of the pressure bands that put some pressure on your wrist. There's a more technical version of that. It actually looks like a watch, and it has two little prongs or electrodes that sit on your wrist, and they give you a slight tingling sensation of a little electric shock, and that has an amazing ability to reduce seasickness. Then that ship's doctor, who we spent a lot of time with chatting, gave Gail a medication, which unfortunately we don't know how to get it in the U.S. and maybe only European, but it had none of the side effects of Dramamine and the usual stuff, which put you to sleep and turn you into a bit of a zombie. This particular medication that they gave worked perfectly. But, you know, seasickness, the smaller ships do tend to have more motion. Not necessarily a sail ship, though. A sail ship, remember, all those sails up there tend to act as a stabilizer.
Mm-hmm. No, well, if it's calm seas, you're not going to get seasick anyway. I mean, if you're out on the ocean, you know, different story. But
right. Well, so, luckily, on this particular occasion, it was calm. But
will you be adding sea cloud to your...
We are. We have cut a special deal with them that our members will be getting some special perks and benefits when they book through Hideaways, which we have our own boutique travel agency that can organize very detailed custom trips for people. As, for instance, one of the things that we've said to SeaCloud, which we were sort of surprised, they don't offer any package that includes hotel stays before or after. Well, we at Hideaways would highly recommend that, depending on the destinations that you're sailing to or from. But we can organize that for you, and we know pretty much all the best hotels in all the different destinations that these cruise ships tend to hit. So we can certainly make sure that you have an enjoyable stay before or after your trip. I was surprised, as a matter of fact, at how few of the passengers on board the Sea Cloud 2, which we were on, were spending any time in Malta at all. At most, I think some of them were spending a night. Many of them were flying out the same day they arrived there. And I said, oh, my God, what a tragedy. Malta is a gorgeous destination. You should.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you read about it online, it doesn't sound very exciting.
Well,
I have to tell you.
Just define exciting for me, because from a historic, cultural, and architectural perspective, it's a gorgeous destination. And actually, I love the cuisine, too.
Mike, I'm afraid we're out of time.
So,
but
anyway.
I want to thank you so much for coming back and sharing your trip, because it sounds delightful.
Well, are always happy to share, and people can go online to our website, hideaways.com, and learn more about us and about some of all our experiences that we share with our community.
Okay.
Of experience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Francine.
Okay, you've been listening to Ship to Shore with Silverman. Happy cruising.